chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario on stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure you bookmark UCY and check out all the other awesome hosts and journalists and voices that are on the channel. And bookmark theantimedia.org. Make sure you follow us on Facebook. I'm sure most of you guys already follow us there, but check us out. We just added some awesome people to our team. I'm not going to go into who they are quite yet. I'll have them as guests on the show sometime this month. But look for some awesome new content coming out, and we're expanding into the whole video world and all that stuff. And things are looking pretty exciting for us here at the Anti-Media. I'm also joined by my co-host D.B. Schwartz. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great, man. I'm real excited about all the celebrity nude leaks. And it was just a great weekend.
What makes you excited about those leaks?
Well, I mean, it's just a great time now for everybody to understand that all of their nudies are already compiled and stored, and they're going to be forever held by the NSA and perused by whoever's in the security and intelligence apparatus in their big data center in Utah. So we all get a taste of what these so-called security experts have been looking at for a long time. I mean, you think you have privacy? You are Scarlett Johansson.
Exactly, man. Yeah, we actually did a meme on that. This week at the Anti-Media, like yesterday, I think, actually, and it was like, it was that Joker meme, you know, where the guy's like, you know, the NSA has all your selfies and right. Nobody bats an eye. The NSA, right. Some hacker leaks Jennifer Lawrence's nude selfies, and everyone loses their minds. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, is it a sign of our horrible celebrity culture? Yes, but can it serve to improve privacy? Yeah. Can it also be used as propaganda to say, hey, the government needs to pass CISPA so that we can protect you from doing all that stuff? No, that's where we need to stop, you know, draw the line, because you know that's where it's going to go.
Right. And not to add fuel to the fire, but we're not talking about the Virgin Mary being exposed here. We're talking about people that have probably already been, many of them, nude or partially nude in movies. And many other leaks and so-called selfies and so on are going to continue to go on. I mean, how naive are you to think that the Apple Cloud is secure? It's not. I mean, it's created specifically the new 5S with a system that gives the NSA a backdoor. If they have a backdoor, hackers have a backdoor. It's the exact same thing. So for anyone to think that anything they do is safe, if you do a Skype, if you do this broadcast, Nick, it's saved forever. Could it be used at some point against us? Sure. Only if the evil people win, and then we don't want to live in this country anyway. So that's the whole thing, man. Just getting awareness out there. Now, this should be used in the same way Ferguson was used. Ferguson, the media tried to portray it as a bunch of hooligans were going and causing a riot, and we needed to have a stronger police presence. It backfired. We understood what it was. It's police brutality, and it's taking a new scary turn because now they're very armed. And guess what? Police departments across the country are now in the process of having to turn back their military equipment. And we can use this same stupid debacle, this same, for lack of a better word, this is a distraction. I mean, there's a lot of other important things going on in the world right now. And people are focused on this, but hey, let's use the media against itself. Let's let everyone know that they themselves are at this second just as exposed. It's just not out in public. It's actually some really sick individuals in private that are looking at this stuff for their jollies.
Yeah. You know, obviously there's people out there that get a kick out of this stuff. Everyone probably knows someone that looked at the pictures and stuff, and you know, that's their problem, I guess. But the overarching issue here is that privacy really doesn't exist anymore, man. And unfortunately, we've put the government in charge of it,
right?
And
oversight.
The only thing that they really oversee is when they're trying to dragnet the stuff and take your information. They don't really protect anybody's information.
Right.
They don't. The laws that are on the books don't really serve to protect us. We see that huge breach of Target and then more recently Home Depot.
Right.
And, you know, who knows, countless other places that have had breach of data. I mean, it's obvious that nothing is really being done to protect your data.
No.
The only thing that's being done is there's this giant multi-billion dollar NSA dragnet where they intercept all that data. And then if you remember back to the HTTPS, the SSL certificate,
right?
The bug that was it called? Heartbleed.
Right.
The Heartbleed bug. The NSA knew about that thing for like, what, a year or two?
Knew about
and
it?
And they yeah, exactly. Maybe, you know, they were exploiting it.
Right.
They were using it against us.
Right.
Knowing damn well that was putting all of us in jeopardy. And yeah, they sat on it for over a year. I mean, that right there told me they don't give a damn about our privacy.
Not at all. I mean, this is the biggest mass surveillance, worthless dragnet ever. I promise you, if we ever get hit with another 9/11, and this is a good segue because that's coming up in what, a week from tomorrow. Okay, and there's a lot of talk about missing airliners in Libya and Ebola martyrs and you name it. The fear mongering has no end. But let's be real about it. This security apparatus is a sham because there's still fear. Why are you afraid? Why is anyone in this country afraid? We should be in a citadel. We should be the safest society ever. And yet we still get inundated by the media, which is fake, that you're in danger, that your children are in danger, and you need to give up your rights and your liberties to preserve what? What are we preserving without those things? A life of servitude, slavery, and your children having so much debt that they'll never have any of the things you take for granted. That's not, to me, worth fighting for. What's worth fighting for is actually going against that system. Let's get back to being human beings, not people. And I would like to just segue into some side notes. If you do your research and understand what it means to be a man, a woman, and a person, you'll understand. People and the name of a person has always been a legal entity so that the courts could pretty much treat you like property, man. It boils down to that. And this stuff's all going to start coming out. As the debt's starting to get to a stratospheric level that we can never possibly even pay off the interest now, guess what? You're going to be asked to pay that debt, and you can say no. It's in your right as a human being to say, no, I am not collateral of the state.
Yeah, it's the time to really step our game up, dude, because the crap that the government's trying to pull right now is just mind-blowing. You know, we know the stuff they've been trying to pull. and the stuff that they've been pulling. And most of it's been illegal. But now they're just coming out right in the open trying to legalize this stuff.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, I mean, I can't really say how bad it's getting.
I mean, let's use two case studies. Hawaii just passed a groundbreaking new pretty much caveat that allows police to have sex with prostitutes in order to prosecute them and not, in fact, go to prison for doing so. Okay, that was passed. That gave legal precedence to everyone. So now you can assume any police department in the country is now either fighting for or has already won the case to allow them to actually solicit sex and go through with it. All right. Secondly, Washington, D.C., which by itself is its own, pretty much its own country, if you really look up the doctrine. The District of Columbia has no laws for marijuana, no laws for prostitution, no laws for child molestation. Look it up. It's a fiefdom. It's created so that all these blackmailed, morally bereft congressmen and senators won't go to prison when they're at work, but they can easily be duped and used and use NSA tapes and materials to do whatever you want. And that's what this is all about. If you want to know what the celebrity leak is about, it's about blackmail. Pure and simple.
Yeah, that's what I was going to make a point of, too, is that think about the stuff that this, you know, hacker got from, you know, these celebrities, and then think about the amount of stuff that the NSA has on you. And think about what you would do in order to hide certain things, whether it's a selfie or a nudie or a
text messages,
a text message or some purchase or whatever right. It is, a Facebook message, a tweet that you had to delete, whatever it is, doesn't necessarily matter. Just think about the leverage that they would have over mostly everybody, not only in the country but in the world. You know, and that's the big thing here, man. This is the message that we should be taking out of this celebrity leak, is that this info could easily be turned on you, on anybody for any reason. You know, whether it's to blackmail you or to quiet you down or to shut you up, whatever, doesn't matter. They could easily do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and they've got all the tools available. All they would have to do is say, oops, an anonymous leak. We don't know where it came from.
Yep.
It just came out of nowhere. Someone hacked your account, bro. Exactly. Sorry. And then that's it.
And it's admissible. And you're done. It's admissible. I mean, at this point, the entire legal process is corrupt start to finish. And it just boils down to money and power. And if you don't have either, you're done. So everybody has iPhones that I look around and watch, and those have backdoors. And 100% of everything that you're doing on an Android and Apple system pretty much is being, you know, infiltrated, intercepted, saved. And people have to understand that. People have to pretty much, you know, think about alternative means if you want to get around things. Or we can actually come together and say, this is not going to be okay. This is not normal. I'm not going to be normalized this. I'm not okay with this. I don't know how we enforce that. And this is where we have to have a discussion as a society about what do we do if we come to a consensus this is not okay. How do we stop the people? Because they're going to use that cloud in the veil of national security like usual, man. They're going to say, if we don't do what we're doing, there'll be another 9/11. That's going to be the excuse all the time. They're human shields. You can use any hot-button term, but it's all BS, okay? It's all BS. So just don't fall for it, and don't let them grab any more, man. We got to start repealing this stuff. If we ever have another terrorist attack, repeal the Patriot Act. It didn't work. We got to start thinking logically. Stop thinking emotionally, and stop letting these guys use the order out of chaos reaction to pretty much get us into this high-tech serfdom. I don't want to live in that world. I want to stop that world.
Yeah, and you know, the problem is, and I saw another article today out of The Guardian, and The Guardian is like hit or miss. Sometimes they post like awesome articles, and sometimes they're like establishment
right.
shilling, you know, and stuff like that. But there was an article today out of The Guardian that was basically saying, you know, if the Department of Homeland Security was created to protect us from foreign, you know, terrorists and stuff, why in the hell are they spending so much time arming to the teeth local police departments and things like that? You know, so it made a valid point. A lot of this stuff, whether it's with the War on Terror, the Patriot Act, the NDAA, which we're going to get into in a few minutes here when we bring Dan Johnson on from Panda.
Excellent.
This stuff is, you know, created in theory to protect us.
Right.
But in the end, it ends up protecting the government from us.
But what
that's what they're doing.
I want to know where the track record is. What have they done? Stopped an underwear bomber? I mean, where has there been a win? Where has the fact that old ladies get their diapers searched at the airport stopped a terrorist attack? They cannot come up with any real proof. They came up with the underwear bomber, it got pulled apart. They'll come up with anything and it'll get pulled apart because all of these things are fake. They all have too many holes. And it's just at this point theater for the masses. And the whole thing is to get the masses to wake up. If the masses ever wake up and understand that it is Wag the Dog, the movie going on in the media will lose its power. Things like Sandy Hook won't affect people. And we'll have a society that's going to question their government and demand leadership, not rulership. And that just scares the shit out of these guys, man. Because they know that if they ever had to come up with a system to take us forward as a race, they'd be unable to. These are parasites. They wouldn't fight so hard if they weren't.
Yeah, they are, and that's exactly why they're hyping us up into this World War III atmosphere, is because they know they're getting ready to lose control.
Yep.
Because the internet backfired on the government, and it's not a surprise, because nearly everything the government tries to do backfires on them.
Because you have greedy, stupid people. I mean, the smartest people in the world don't work for government. They're not going to work for government. This is why government can't work anymore. It's why the police can't work anymore. You cannot attract bereft and derelict individuals to positions of power and expect society to run smoothly and there to be no corruption. Can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. You summarized it perfectly there. You know, the other thing is here that it looks like Putin may be throwing some cold water on this World War III hype now. It looks like, at least according to a tweet released by the Petro Poroshenko, whatever his name is, the Prime Minister of Ukraine, he tweeted out that Ukraine and Russia have come to a permanent ceasefire, which is good news for us, bad news for Obama, because he's over there in Scandinavia right now or Northern Europe, and trying to hype up this NATO stuff.
NATO.
And they're trying to increase the NATO presence and bring NATO back, as if we're not spending enough money on NATO as it is, as if we're not spending enough money on foreign policy. It's as if we 100 bases, I mean, 1,000 bases in over 100 countries isn't enough as it is.
Right.
You know, and it's just almost to the point where you can't even take it seriously anymore. This whole ISIS threat, manufactured by the U.S., it's not a real threat to our shores, despite the propaganda saying that these guys are already operating in Mexico and all this stuff. You got these 11 airliners that got hijacked or at least disappeared or went missing out of Libya, and now these guys are trying to say, well, is it going to be another 9/11?
I mean, they may be able to hit Rome, or I say the Vatican City, but there's no way they're getting across the Atlantic. And I love the article by Justin, man. Can we just get back to logic? Can we understand what these human people, who maybe they were born into money that me and you still use for the meantime, but they have nothing else. They're not genetically modified super babies. If they were, they would listen to us. They wouldn't listen to us, right?
So we're joined now on the program with Dan Johnson with People Against the NDAA, also known as PANDA. And we wanted to bring you on to, first of all, talk about Ferguson, and then talk about, we were just talking a little bit about how the state has been creeping in the name of national security. And I know your specialty is with the NDAA, and I figured we could talk a little bit about that as well. How's it going, man?
Well, I came onto the radio show to the word genetically modified super babies, so I guess it's going interesting. I'm doing well, even being spending 2 weeks in America's favorite war zone, I haven't lost my sense of humor. So I've been doing pretty well.
That's good to hear, man. So how did it go in Ferguson? So you were down there for a while. You were down there for over a week, weren't you?
2 weeks, yeah.
And you got to witness some of the militarization of the police in action. Tell us a little bit about that.
I got to witness the military in action, too. You had National Guard there. And it's really hard to put into words, because for the listeners who don't know me, I started Panda, which was a anti-using the military on our own citizens on U.S. soil organization. And started that 2.5 years ago. We've banned a lot of what happened in Ferguson in about 7 different cities or 7 different jurisdictions now. But when it goes from paper to real life, there's something different about that. And it's really difficult. Are you guys still hearing me? Do we lose the connection?
No, we're here.
Okay, all right, good. So it's really hard to put into words how different and how surreal it is. I mean, when I was down there, I will never forget being walked off a parking lot by 2 National Guard MPs. I'll never forget that there was National Guard snipers on grocery store rooftops. I'll never forget the callousness and the carelessness that the police had to the community. I'll never forget mothers screaming. You know, they go to the National Guard compound, essentially it was the police command center, now being watched over by regular military. And I live streamed some mothers screaming that this is genocide. They're going to kill our black babies. They're all out here killing our black babies. And I watched frustration on the faces of young black men. I watched some very good people of integrity from the Liberty Movement, like Derek, come down. Yet, I also noted that of the people from the loud and proud Liberty Movement who showed up in Ferguson, you could have fit us in a hotel room with a very nice suite hotel room. I noticed that there was a race issue to this, that it wasn't all hunky-dory when it came to race down there. And I probably the weirdest thing of all that I noticed was that just 4 blocks away, a couple miles away, life went on as normal. People knew it was happening, but they talked about, like, I went into a pizza shop in a couple cities over to get some St. Louis-style pizza, and the guys there talking about Ferguson, like, they talk about something in the news, like, oh, yeah, well, that's happening over there, but, you know, that's just going on in Ferguson. It was like, I wonder, is this what a war zone's like? Is it, like, 4 miles outside the war zone, life goes on? Is it Baghdad, that 4 miles outside the street where U.S. soldiers are kicking in doors, there's a market, and people are going about their daily lives, like, the 4 streets over, there's nothing wrong going on? I think that was the most shocking thing down there, was that it was as if the war was in Ukraine, or the war was in Iraq, or the war was in Syria, not 3 miles across their doorstep.
That's crazy. It's like they say, it's right outside your door, wake up, right? And people still won't wake up.
Until it's literally standing on their doorstep, right. Yes.
Yeah, and that's what's so scary, man, is that people are so kind of detached from the situation that's really going on here. And that's one of the things that we try to do, is try to make this thing personal. And there's so many Americans that are kind of, you know, apathetic to the whole Palestinian struggle and all that. And that's fine. But what they fail to realize is that it's
our money that's funding all of this stuff. You know, it's our money that's militarizing the police. Excess weaponry that is flowing from the military that's ending up in the hands of these police. And where did that
and it's our money that will fund the lawsuit payout when we sue them over their use of the equipment.
Exactly, man. And you would think that the people that should be held responsible would be the police, but unfortunately, the police are paid for by the public. So when they mess up. Yeah, they hurt the community, and then at the same time, guess who pays back when they hurt the community? The community. You know, it just doesn't make sense. It's not in any way, shape, or form accountable at all. You know, no. And there's just in its current state, the United States police state is not going to be held accountable, and by all means. It looks like the politicians, at least this guy that we wrote about today, a state senator from Missouri, is trying to make it even less accountable.
Yep. I mean,
I didn't actually hear about that. What was that going on with?
So he's trying to make it so that if in the future, and probably with the case in Ferguson as well, that anytime a cop kills somebody, that the officer's information will not be released publicly. And so this guy's a Missouri state senator, and he's also the guy behind the I forget the organization. I think it's called Support the Shield or something. It's the main organization that was raising money for the cop that shot Mike Brown. Yeah,
right. And this is the thing, man, is they want to roll in all these protections like a Monsanto Protection Act. What I'm curious, Dan, is NDAA 15 being discussed with. In regards to Ferguson making changes so that they can kind of dupe the public again?
I don't really think there's any need for it. I don't really think there's any need to dupe the public. I mean, what a lot of people don't realize about the NDAA is, although it's a budgetary bill, the sections that declare America a battlefield aren't going to expire anytime soon, ever, actually. They won't expire unless we repeal them. There's no sunset provision on them. And as far as I know, there's no sunset provision on any of the 1033 program from the 1997 NDAA either, which is the transfer of DOD material to police departments. And there's also no sunset provision on the Department of Homeland Security sending out grants or accepting grants and giving out Bearcats and Bears and all kinds of not even excess military equipment, but equipment designed specifically for local police use that will be used in the same vein as the DOD military equipment, and it looks like military equipment. So I don't think there's any need. If they want to dupe the public, that's fine. And if they want to try to put in things to stop the flow of military weapons to police departments, that's great. But most of the police departments around the country already have them, already have this. I mean, several counties, there's one county in Ohio has like 5 MRAPs. So they have, you know, if there's IEDs that line the streets of Ohio for some reason, we're going to call on that county and they're just going to roll their vehicles through. But, I mean, I don't think at this point you can change it legislatively. You don't need to, and I don't think at this point you can.
So what do you think as far as the relation to Ferguson and the militarization of the police? How does it reflect on the NDAA and what the government now is at least legally able to do in our communities?
When the only difference between your local police and the military is some paperwork, one's under the DOD and one's not. When that's the only difference, and the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, which, for those of you who don't know, essentially declared America legally a battlefield under the laws of war. Once America is a battlefield, anything's possible. Torture, indefinite detention, execution, lockdown of American cities, etc., etc., etc. So America is considered a battlefield under the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act. And the police in Ferguson looked like the military, treated their people like the military, or acted like the military, most importantly, treated their people like they were an occupying army, and then the National Guard was brought in as if things weren't bad enough already. So it essentially was, without using the exact legal terminology, it was exactly what the NDAA would look like in an American city. It's what we've been warning about for just shy of 3 years, that this is a dangerous thing, and you cannot just not pay attention. You can, I mean, this isn't the first time the military police have been brought out either. They were brought out in Big Bear Lake, California, when the LAPD, I believe, was going after Chris Dorner. They were brought out in Watertown, Massachusetts, when the Boston police were going after the alleged Boston Marathon bombers. They brought this out in, there isn't their first rodeo, but now people are paying attention. So now's the best time to push back before it does happen in another American city, and they just decide to occupy it. I mean, in Ferguson, there were checkpoints. If you were not a resident of Ferguson and you drove in by car, you could not get in. There were checkpoints. And for a friend of mine, she couldn't even get out. So she drove in during the day where there's no checkpoints. At night, there was checkpoints. She couldn't even get out. The National Guard had checkpoints in the parking lot around the police command center, the entire parking lot. This is probably 1,000 feet, maybe 2,000 feet away from the command center. You have National Guard Humvees, and you have MPs patrolling the perimeter. I mean, I don't know. The only difference was that they weren't under the Department of Defense. And when the only difference is a piece of paperwork, and you're really out there defending people's rights, how dare you stand down and because, well, oh, it's just paperwork. No, that doesn't make any sense. If you're going to practically stop their rights from being violated, it doesn't matter if it's the DOD, your local police, city councilman, a judge, or an alderman from Monsanto. It doesn't matter who it is. If they're violating someone's rights, you should be standing in the way.
Exactly, man. And people, there's just so much apathy going on, you know, that it really just lets the situation boil over into what we've seen in Ferguson. Now, I think we talked last show about how basically the militarization of the police, it's basically an end around the Posse Comitatus Act because you know, right after the Civil War, they came out and they said, okay, well, we don't want to have the military in our streets, policing the streets and all that stuff. And yeah, that kind of made pretty good sense.
Well, so, don't stop there though. What was the reason for the Posse Comitatus Act? It's because when the Northern military, the Union Army, was stationed in the South during Reconstruction, they deliberately used their authority to prevent blacks from voting in the South. That's why we have the Posse Comitatus Act. It wasn't a part of the Constitution. It wasn't an amendment to the Constitution. It was put in place after we gave the Northern, the Union military in the South power, and they used it exactly as the Southern Army would have to completely oppress and restrict the rights of people.
Yeah, man. And it, to me, it almost seems like this whole militarization of the police, it's basically just exploiting a loophole in the Posse Comitatus Act. So basically, they're like, well, we can't have the military directly police the streets and carry out these tasks. But what we can do is just turn the police into military instead. You know, and that, to me, it seems like exactly what they're trying to do.
I would challenge your usage of the word we, because when you refer to we, you're talking about two different entities. You have, in Ferguson, the federal government was not in charge. The state government was, and the local government was, and the county government was. So when you talk about we, the state was in charge here, and the federal government would be looking at utilizing, or the federal state would be looking at utilizing the military under the NDAA. So it's important to understand, and the reason I bring that up is it's important to understand this isn't just some small group of people. This is a pervasive mentality throughout the governing structure that, hey, if these people do something we don't like, we need to respond with military force. This was not a nudge from the federal government. This was the independent actions of a state government, of a local government, to react to their citizens in a way that shows they didn't need an order from the top. They already believe and they already buy into this militarization from the local to the state to the federal level.
And Dan, do you believe that that's because they've been emboldened by the fact that the federal government itself has pretty much disregarded the Constitution and especially been caught on tape saying so?
I would say that's a part of it. I would also say another part is local governments have gotten away with violating the constitutional rights, particularly of predominantly black communities, since basically the founding of this country. So I would also say that there's a huge problem with that. They do see the federal government getting away with it. I mean, you had a police officer not too long ago who said, well, the president doesn't follow the Constitution, so neither should we. That is an element to it, but I think it's simply the local and state and federal and your mom and pop set up a local governing structure somewhere. They're all tyrannical, but they have different levels of power. And what we saw here is the state and local government had equal or very close to equal levels of power as the federal government did and used it accordingly.
Yeah, to me it seems like, you know, we've just been so complacent for so long, and we've allowed these people to gain these mentalities over us, you know, and really all it is a mental, it's just a mental thing that they have over us, because if we look at the situation in Ferguson, the last concrete number that I saw was that there was at least 25 different departments that responded to Ferguson from, you know, all over St. Louis and all over Missouri. You know, they had to bring in a bunch of people, which meant that they had to take from other places as well. And then even then, that wasn't enough, and they had to bring in the National Guard. So I guess one ingredient that we're missing here for this mass movement that we're looking for, which is to, you know, basically unshackle the country from all of this tyrannical government and stuff, is that people are just so apathetic. You know, like you were saying, people that are directly in Ferguson, they were out there on the streets, and they were out there protesting, and they were out there trying to gain a voice and all that stuff. But people that were just a few miles away, a few towns away, were kind of just like, whatever. It's not happening to us, so, you know, it's not that big of a deal.
Divide and conquer.
Yeah, and so that's the problem, is that we've allowed this to take place for so long, and it's become such a normal thing. I mean, for at least since World War II, and especially since 9/11 and the Patriot Act and the whole war on terror and stuff, we've just become so accustomed to this stuff that nobody really takes, not nobody, but not that many people in the mainstream society takes that much of opposition to it. You know, and we're in this place now where there's so many people that are just like, you know, they're just doing their thing and, you know, it's okay. But what people don't realize is that we're on a slippery slope right now, and that we're not that far away from a horrible, horrible situation, which is more similar to what we saw in Nazi Germany than what you would think about in a quote unquote free country like America. You know, I think that's our big problem, is that people are so stuck in this mentality that, if it's not happening to me, it's not a big deal. And I think I don't want to call it a meme, but it's a quote from back in the Holocaust days where someone was like, you know, at first they came for the communists and I didn't say nothing because right. They were the communists, and then they came for the Christians and, you know, all that
Ferguson's
stuff.
a minority county in a heartland city, man. I mean, you can't get any more oppressed.
Exactly. And so the thing is, for everybody everywhere, is that we all need to stand against any injustice, because if we're not, then how can we expect anybody to stand with us whenever we experience injustice?
Right.
And if I may, is it okay if I can add, like, my guest was going to come in via my surprise guest was going to call in, but he couldn't call in. Can I add him to the call via Skype now?
I could add him if you're willing to send me his Skype information.
Yeah, I don't quite know how to do that, but I probably can. Oh, yeah.
If you're on Facebook, you can send it to me.
See, I got it. Oh, yeah, I just sent it via the Skype chat here, so you should have it right there. Bring him in, because you talked about, you know, people standing up and why it's so important for people to stand up, and I want you guys to meet someone who stood up and who was specifically called out and lied about and slandered all over mainstream media for standing up, who was actually at the front lines of the protests. I want to bring him in if possible.
Yeah, like, give me a second and I'll call him in right now.
Okay, cool.
I guess while we're waiting, Dan, can you touch real briefly on your thoughts on the fact that the Ferguson PD says now they're going to have cameras?
It would be really annoying for me to go, but I'm going to do it anyway, obviously. Look, it's for people who have, for people in communities like that, in majority African-American communities, it's going to be more than a change of dress. Because remember, for the civil rights movement wasn't that long ago. And for them, it wasn't officers with Uzis who were oppressing them in the civil rights movement. It was your local sheriff with a six shooter. It wasn't officers in APCs. It was Alabama officers on horseback. It's going to take more than a change of dress. And it's going to take a lot more than a change of dress. I'll tell you something I do applaud. I applaud Copwatch sending 40 cameras to Ferguson and giving them to residents.
Right.
That's the type of thing I applaud. Because you can't... government comes from the root word gubernare, or Latin for gubernare, which is to rule, and ment, which is an act or a process. Government is not an institution. It is an act or a process. And so to expect the state, which is the embodiment of government, the embodiment of the act or process of adding aggressive force to something, this is the root word of government, the act or process. And since the only difference between government and non-governmental action is the addition of force, all we can surmise from that is government is the addition of aggressive force as a process to an action. To expect the institution that embodies the addition of force to certain aspects to all of a sudden no longer use that force is ridiculous. One of the reasons we're seeing so much police brutality today isn't because police brutality is magically appearing. It's because we have, all of a sudden, we have cameras, and we're now recording it.
Exactly. The technology is unleashing the accountability factor for these guys that have been able to operate, you know, with basically to operate with immunity for so long. Whether it's the government or whether it's the police, I mean, the internet is unlocking everything for us. And actually, we talked about that at the beginning of the show. How, you know, the internet is actually a creation of the Department of Defense. And the way I look at it is I figure the government put it out there initially because they thought it was going to be an easy way to keep track of people and control people. And then it backfired on them, just like many things that the government does, because they're not very good at planning and they don't have very smart people to carry out these tasks that they're always trying to carry out. This stuff just backfires on them all the time. And I agree with you. I was wondering the same question a while back is, you know, is it that there's more horrible things going on with the police, or is it just that there's more people with the ability to right. document what's going on?
Right.
And I was listening.
Maybe a little of both, because a lot of old cops are coming out whistleblowing now saying, listen, we used to get trained differently. We used to be trained where we were a neighborhood cop and we knew the people. We protected them from people we didn't know. And it's different now, man. Now we have agent provocateurs throwing rocks to try to get a response so they can crack down. I mean, this stuff is insane.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard rumors of that at Ferguson, but I did see another video recently that documented it. It wasn't at Ferguson, but it was another place. I'm not sure where, but they definitely documented police provocateurs.
Right, that was Brazil.
And it's not a surprise because no. It's something that when a protest begins to become effective, they want to put it down
right.
quickly. And that's some of the tactics that they're willing to do. First, they'll try to use psychological tactics, then they'll try to use police bully tactics, and then if that doesn't work, then they'll bring in the provocateurs, and then they can really crack down right. on people. Trying to get your caller in here, but he's not responding to my request, so we'll have to wait. If he does respond...
Oh, really?
If he does respond, that'll be cool. If not, then Derek's going to call in a few minutes here. Can you
call him on the phone? If I were to IMU his phone number, just because it is really important you guys hear from this guy. I mean, I can't stress how important it is.
Yeah, definitely. We need to have a perspective of the front line so that because you have to understand all the people listening. This is just a test. This is a litmus test. Everything they do is a litmus test, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I can't call him from our side, but if you send him our call-in number, he'd be able to call in to us.
He tried that already, at least the one you gave me. That's the problem we ran into in the first place.
Okay, let me send it to you again and make sure you have the right number and see if that doesn't work. If not, then we'll have to... if not, then we'll have to tell a story without him here or something like that.
Oh, well, we'll probably figure it out. But yeah, I mean, I do believe that the military... power corrupts, but absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the more power you give someone, the higher the propensity it is that they will abuse it. That's just the way it works. So the more tools and the more power you give local police departments, the more they're going to abuse it. That being said... watch old video from the civil rights protests. See old pictures from the civil rights protests. I do not believe just because someone takes up a profession that that makes them an immoral person. However, have the police changed that much? Or is it just that we're now recording them more so they don't have to break the blue code of silence? It just is broken for them.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Dan, I think you can, if you're a student of history like me, and it sounds like you really are, Kent State, man, it's not going to stay in a minority, it's going to be anybody that's a dissident. You have to understand that that's what these lists, the compiling are for, and, you know, just make an overwhelming wave against this repression, man, because the tyranny is connected to technology, and once we kind of take that back from them and circumvent it, they're not going to have much left, and that's the whole goal.
Yeah, that's always been the upper hand of the state, is that they've always got superior technology and superior amounts of this technology. So, I mean, yeah, they got the MRAPs, and the government's got a bunch of tanks, a bunch of planes, a bunch of helicopters and stuff. But what makes this time in history different, I think, is the ability and the opportunity that the internet brings us, and then the open source technology, and I know... you know, live stream and Ustream isn't exactly open source, but it is free and it's accessible. And this is the kind of technology that really frees us from the grasp of the, you know, apparatus. Because, you know, of course you have the state on one side, but then you have these extremely large corporations on the other. The media industrial complex, as Ron Paul liked to refer to it. They're all kind of connected
right.
in a way. And this decentralization that we're starting to finally see with the technology and with these ideas like open source and these ideas like Creative Commons and these things that make corporate control irrelevant, like live stream, like Ustream. I know, Dan, I was watching your live stream like a lot of the time that you were over there. And it's just a completely unadulterated version of the truth. You know, and the stuff that we see... from the corporate media is all spun in all these different directions, or just formed to make a compelling story so that they can get a lot of ratings, or even worse, it's designed in a way to push an agenda, you know, and that's what's so frightening about all this stuff. But at the same time, it's so encouraging that now we're starting to get the chance as an individual with a $100 phone to go and make one video, for instance, like with the Rodney King beating. I mean, that was done with a camcorder. Of course, back then, camcorders were probably, you know, a couple thousand bucks. But a little incident like that can change everything. And I think that is what we have right now that we never had in the past. And that's what we're going to be able to use to our advantage. Now we have William Moreno on the call. How's it going, man?
Hello.
Hey, how's it going, man? You're on the Anti-Media Radio. You're live with Dan Johnson and Nick Burnaby here. Dan, I'm going to bring you in to talk a little bit about your experience over there in Ferguson.
So let me intro you for a second there, Billy, and then I'll let you jump in. Billy came from Austin, Texas, to help out in the protests. And whereas I never planned to be on the front lines, ended up on the front lines once, but I never planned to be on the front lines. My goal was to stay in the background. My goal was to help out the groups and help the city and the community recover and actually institute some real change. I did some live streaming on the side. Billy actually spent a lot of time on the front lines, spent a lot of time with people. I respect him a lot. And you want to talk about propaganda, you want to talk about agitators. I'll let him kind of say the rest of the story, but he traveled miles and miles to Ferguson, Missouri, because he saw something was wrong. And then I'll let him tell you what he got for it.
All right, am I on?
Yeah, you're on, man.
Yep.
Okay. So, basically, you know, shortly after the story started developing in Ferguson, I was aware of it from the original incident with Mike Brown shooting. It wasn't until I saw, you know, the way the protest and street rallies and looting, which I did see happening even from home at that point, it wasn't until I saw the way that was being handled by the police and the way those engagements were going that I really decided that I should go up there. The decision was basically I was available to help, and I thought I could bring some calm to the situation. I'm you know, that's what I know about myself. I'm very, very calm and level-headed in high intensity situations. So I decided I'd go up there and try to help everyone, police included, get through this event as much as I could help that happen peacefully, kind of a healthy resolution. And I didn't have a lot of ideas about what that would be. Dan has a lot of experience with this stuff. For me, it was my first time making my way to an event like this. It was the first time it was available and a relatively easy decision to make. So I got up there. I got to Ferguson Saturday, a week into the protesting. When I arrived there, you know, like I said, I wasn't sure what I was going to be doing. So basically, I went around and just introduced myself to people. And as I like to put it, I kind of leaned back in the conversations I was having with them just to let people tell me what they need so I could figure out what I could actually provide. And early on, it was just a lot of connecting with people, a lot of listening, a lot of handing out water, buying people various lunches and stuff. And on that first day, which was the first day the curfew was implemented, I was at the site until 11:55. Curfew was at 12 a.m. And after spending my last hour and a half there talking with people about what they were going to do with the curfew and kind of helping them think through everything that went into that decision, I decided to leave at 11:55. It was my first day there, and you know, I wasn't too confident in that I understood what was going on. The next day, I came back to the site. You know, the curfew had eventually been enforced about 45 minutes after 12 with tear gas and some more, you know, physical engagement between the police and the crowd. And I didn't know the details, but, you know, that day one of the supplies, I brought extra water because I knew people would need that. I brought extra tear gas, gas masks, the disposable ones, and basically just spent my day like going around talking to people, including the police, about what they expected to happen today. You know, just helping people anticipate and think through and be able to do what they were trying to do with some more forethought. And after going through that all day, basically at about 9 o'clock that night, when most of the crowd was still there expecting 3 hours before a midnight curfew of relative calm, something precipitated a full-on tear gas bombardment. Most of the crowd was there. There were families. You know, most of the daytime crowd was still around. And at that point, I was not at the front of the line, but I was near it, and I started helping people get out of the tear gas. I'm just checking that I'm still on the air.
Yeah, man, you're good. You're on. You only got 3 minutes to go, though, just to let you know.
Okay, so I'll speed through. So basically, I got caught in the tear gassing that night and found myself very much able to help people, even at that extreme of the situation, be able to stay together, stay focused, avoid violent activity. I stopped a lot of people from throwing rocks who were trying to find something to do. I'd hand them a water bottle and tell them to go help someone, and they would take the water bottle and go find someone that needed their eyes rinsed out. I was able to do a lot of that. The next day at 3 o'clock, while I was talking to store owners about collecting contact information so I could get them relief funds after everything was said and done and I had money left over that I wasn't spent on the ground, while I was talking to store owners, I was arrested for the first time. Me and one other out-of-towner who were relatively easy to identify, not to make it a racial thing, but because we were two white guys standing in a group of five other black people, and the way I understood it, it made us easy to identify that we might not be from the area. We were singled out of a group of seven people that were just standing around talking and arrested. In broad daylight, while there were dozens of people doing the exact same thing we were doing up and down the storefronts. During that arrest, an officer did ask, implied to me that I would have no problems, legal issues with law enforcement in Missouri as long as I never came back. But the second arrest was at midnight later that night, while I was trying to help move the crowd in accordance with police instructions. I made the conscious decision when I saw police moving in on that crowd to turn around and try and let them know that no one knew where they were supposed to be, how they were supposed to evacuate the area and disperse as police were ordering. My third arrest, I was in the middle of a crowd that was being moved around both by community leaders and the police. This is again about midnight on Tuesday, the following evening. And while they were moving us around and guiding us to a designated protest lot, we found ourselves unable to move because there were police on all sides. And at this point, I was arrested during a massive, you know, 40 or 50 people picked up in the next 15 to 20 minutes. When I was arrested, at the time I was arrested, before they searched me or anything, one of the officers on the ground knew it was my third arrest. Later that evening, Captain Johnston singled me out while talking about the outside agitators in a press conference.
Wow, man. So it's like all this propaganda about outside agitators, it seems like, was just that. It was just propaganda. And that's kind of what we figured from the first place. Hey, thanks for joining us. Thank you, Dan. Once again, this is the Anti-Media Radio. Catch you guys on Friday.